You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 261, Ephemeral Hardware. Take a picture, it'll last longer. Season 6, episode 261 of Furloughs, Inc. Today is September the 25th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and sipping on a lemonade and iced tea is my brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, so you decided that we should shorten our name just because we're getting
exactly
now.
Exactly. Kind of we're switching it up, man. We're focusing on what we are all about.
We're going to get into this later, a whole lot deeper, talking about the company formerly known as Snapchat, if you're not
keeping up. I like to call them Snap Incorporated.
Yes. That, you know, I work for HP Inc.
Right.
So I get it. It's kind of the hot new trend. So, you know, that's what we need to be. Furlough.
I know. Inc. And you want to know who started this? No, I guess it didn't start it, but I feel like
We'll get into it. We'll get into it because I have a scary observation.
I hate Evan Spiegel.
So and yet you give him the
you know what? He's just every once in a while he grabs my attention and I can't stop. You know who I should have given the honor of the opening to? Batman. Yes.
Batman.
So
did not see that coming.
So I just think you'll enjoy this. So I tweeted about it. So I figured to explain it further. But
explain further.
I listen to, which I've noticed that podcasts I listen to do a good job of mentioning other podcasts that they listen to, and so I feel like I need to do a better job of doing that. So I listen to this podcast called The Weekly Planet, and they talk about comic books, movies, and stuff, and they're hilarious. But they did a best of Batman episode last week, where they talk about all the different incarnations of comic book Batman and
comic book.
No,
not
well,
movies.
I mean,
okay,
all Batmans,
sure.
Video games, movies, whatever. But one of the
TV
Batmans
shows
that they talked about that kind of intrigued me was the Commissioner Gordon Batman, which I didn't know anything about.
Commissioner Gordon puts on the suit.
It's pretty awesome. And I think, I don't know. I went to Berkeley with Diana on Friday just to hang out and have some pizza up there. And I had a couple of beers, to be frank, as she was driving, and we were walking in, and we walked into a comic book store, as I am wont to do when I'm out and about and exploring. I like never buy comic books ever.
Makes sense.
But like every time we go to some store, some cool city, we have a comic book store. We go and just look around, and never buy anything. Well, I don't know, between Commissioner Gordon, Batman, and the double IPA,
the Thinned Blood.
I got a couple of the Snyder Vert Batman books that are like 12 issues in one and stuff, and so I'm getting into it. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's one of those summary ones. Is
no,
that
it's
how
a
it works? Is it, or is it? It's all of them.
Yeah, it's all of them.
Together.
So it's they were yeah they were 12.
Interesting. So you can catch up,
yeah.
Essentially.
And they've got like 9 volumes. Yeah, yeah. There's 12 issues per volume, and I got the first 2 volumes.
Sweet. There's a comic book store here in town. It's hilarious if you get a subscription with them. I don't. I go straight to the source. But I've got a friend. He's been on the show before, David Perry. He does it through this comic book store. They assume, when you like, can I get a subscription to, let's say, Batman? They'll assume that you mean every single Batman comic and its derivatives and its summaries.
Whoa.
And so, like, the first month he showed up and was like, all right, I'm ready for it. And they put like a stack of 12 comics down. And I mean, he was doing like, he did one for his daughter, like My Little Ponies. And they were like, here's 6 My Little
what?
Ponies. Like, what? she's 7. What is this?
Yeah, that's...
And they're like, you wanted to subscribe. And he was like, I wanted like one a month. What are you talking about? They're like, oh, well, we've already kind of ordered like 3 months. So. It was pretty funny. He was like, whatever. But like, put me on the... And so now whenever he like, he likes to switch it up pretty regularly. He'll be like, I just want the main thread. This number, like, no of anything. I mean, it would even be to the point where... If, let's say, you were getting them, you got the entire year. When the summary one came out, that was essentially the repeat of the entire year. Oh, yeah, you'd get that.
Yeah, too. Oh, yeah.
Just, I mean, part of it, they're like, they're assuming you're more of a collector. Right. Well, I mean, I know why they're assuming. Yeah. But, yeah, it's pretty entertaining. So you just got the yearly summary. Did you, are you getting on the monthly drip
so
as
I
well
got,
to keep
so,
the story
so this
going?
One is, a this series, the author...
You're kind of doing the Netflix model. You'll
the author is done.
And then take
yeah, with this series.
Oh, so the
yeah,
series
so it's 9
is,
volumes
okay,
and it's
okay.
done, as far as I know.
Gotcha.
And I've heard it's a pretty, it's one of the, it's like, I was given a list of like 3 of the, of course I have a hard time remembering them now. Like the classic Batmans that you yeah. like, you got to read, but like The Killing Joke, The Dark Knight were the 2 ones. And then this one is another one of the ones where they're like, this series is a great one because it's just, I don't know. It's
well, all the Batman ones, from what I understand, I haven't subscribed to any. Like, they're fantastic because they're essentially
right.
mystery novels. Because he's
right.
a detective. You know, I mean, that's what he is. And so they're written in that mystery novel detective type of genre. And it's just well
right.
done.
For know. Sure.
So that's cool,
yeah,
man.
So
welcome to the
I figure in
books.
Unlike books, for whatever reason, I'm like, I don't want a digital copy, I want the real thing.
Isn't there something
nice,
about it?
But
yeah.
I don't know. It's cool.
I'm doing action comics along with Superman. And it's kind of fun because they're both like around the same thing, but clearly different storylines, but they're the same. It's
yeah.
weird. It's a fine line. They gotta
yeah.
dance. It's
it
very
is,
interesting.
It's, yeah, that's the best way to put it. It's interesting. So it's cool. I'm getting into it.
Cool,
and then
man.
Before we go too far into the show, I have one more question. You do anything special for tomorrow? I'm so excited. I'm having a party called the 3 P's, pizza, pilsners, and politics. Where my friends will come over.
What? Oh, the
yeah,
debate?
My friends will come over. We're going to eat pizza, drink some beer, watch the debate, and get angry at each other.
That, no, I'm not. Because instead, I am starting swim lessons. With
oh, that's
going
to be much. I'm sure that
yeah.
will actually.
I'm really looking forward to figuring out the swimming thing myself. And
yeah,
then...
right? Yeah. I'm.
Actually, when I was in Indonesia, I went swimming in a lake that was a very sulfuric lake and had little mini waves in it. And they were like, oh, it's just 1/2 kilometer. You can do that. And I looked out and went, that looks rather far, but sure. And about halfway through, I realized I'm only
yeah.
human. And I was towed the rest of the way. And it was quite humbling
yeah.
experience. So I'm half like... Yeah, maybe I need a refresher course.
I can't.
I'm just out of shape.
I was gonna say, yeah. Well, but honestly, like, swimming's hard, even if you're, like, generally in shape. Like, you know, I don't want to brag too much, but I'm a bit of a marathoner, James. and I can't swim, like, 1/4 mile. Like, it's without being dead. Like, swimming is a technique. It's a skill beyond just being physically able, you know.
Yeah, my hard part, too, is, like, I was just, like, my muscles were just killing me. And they're like, just lay on your back and kind of rest. To which the small waves
yeah,
play
I've,
a key role in me
I've
not
I've never
being
bought
that
either. Maybe it's because I'm, like, less buoyant than other people or just I do – I relax wrong. But I've never been able to rest well in the ocean or even the lake.
So all that to say, I won't be watching it live and I'll probably – watch it some other time. I hear it's supposed to be like Super Bowl level tune-ins.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't even know.
Huge. Are you going to watch it on Twitter?
We're
or
watching
on television?
We're
going
to DVR it, so it's a little bit easier to jump around.
Okay.
I know. Because well, we got to be able to pause, because okay. I'm telling you, like, I'm bringing together, like, all of the, my, I'm bringing together friends of different political perspectives.
You are. And you're giving them alcohol.
I'm so excited.
You are a gutsy guy. So let me ask you this. Like, I mean, clearly you don't want genuine discourse. So, like, are you just going to rile people up?
No,
is that your whole goal? I mean, I love to do that just to get people twerked and, which I know is not helpful.
I like to do it. Like my whole strategy is this is my thing. I try to see everybody's perspective. I try to at least understand the argument they're making as best as I can articulate it on their behalf. Sometimes that means I'm the only person in the room that's willing to defend the position of one or the other candidates. Because I'm just trying to understand their argument. Not that I necessarily disagree with it or not. I'm just trying to see, does it have any validity? Yeah. And sometimes that makes me like a murderer. Like it makes me literally Hitler because I'm able to defend the indefensible, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. But I don't agree with it. This is just their argument. And the nice part about this particular one of the candidates this year is that say what you will about him, you always need to clarify anything that he says. There's always room for clarification. He's the
master of ambiguity.
He has a particular way of speaking that. Anyways, you know what, James, though?
Well, I get all my political information from a cartoonist, so
it's good stuff.
What do I know?
I didn't get a chance to read that article yet, by the way. doesn't matter. Because that's not what we're here to talk about, James.
Essentially, he totally flip-flops. It's pretty awesome.
I'm excited.
He does it
too. But this week, what we're going to talk about, James, like every week, is technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, I got James. No, I don't have a short disclosure. James has got a short disclosure. He wants to throw our way.
Yeah, I do. I work for HP Inc., but I do not represent HP Inc. or any of HP Inc.'s opinions. I also own, for the time being, part of Twitter and Etsy and Lending
Club. I like it. I like it a lot. I still own a share of Skull Candy, which I think they're becoming increasingly incensed with. if you want to follow me through the week where I'll tweet about stuff and Instagram about stuff, my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. I probably will be on the Twitter machine tomorrow night, but not tweeting about it. Just consuming. And we'll talk about why not in a second. And then if you want to go on to if you want to follow my pictures, you can follow me on Instagram. It's NextWiggin4, WIGGIN, number 4, the next in front of it.
I am JamesFurlow.com on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Snap.
And if you
not
right now,
on it,
yeah,
though,
me neither. So. That's why I don't mention it. But that might change, and I'm not even joking. Furloughbros.com. If you want to get more information about the show, specifically anything we talk about this week, in all the articles, any videos, links, any clips like that, anything you want to get know more, there is more to know. We don't shoot off in a vacuum. Just go to furloughbros.com. And check it out. Also, if you don't want to go to furloughbros.com every week, but you want that every week, you can get it delivered to your email address. Just go there and you can sign up for a newsletter and all sorts of stuff. Good. I'm gonna jump right into it, man. So
do it.
I had a Facebook post earlier this week. I actually tweeted it and it got pushed to Facebook. And the thing is that on Facebook, it got more of a reaction. So I'm going to talk about this one. I almost responded to a political post on Facebook. Wow. That was close. And I got like 32 likes and reactions. My favorite part about it was that it's like the different, like, the array of people who reacted to it. Like, I have, like, there's, like, a core group of people that, like, regularly like stuff that I post. This one was, like, people that I haven't talked to in, like, nearly a decade were like, yep, like, I agree with this. And, like, I don't get a ton of, like, likes and stuff. But, you know, if I get, like, 2 or 3 likes, yeah. I feel like that's pretty good. Like, whatever. But, you know, exactly. Yeah. I'm not here for the likes game. But the reaction to people being like, ugh, politics on Facebook. I don't wanna get involved in that. Well, so there's even,
I wonder how Facebook feels about that. You know, are they like, do they feel the way you feel? Like, oh, our platform is being destroyed by politics. Or are they like, yes, we've created a platform for politics. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder, I just internally, on one level, I'm sure, like, they're happy. Oh, good, people are using it. They've also got to feel like we're also annoying a ton of users and we don't know what to do about it.
I'll bet it depends on who you, I'll bet, yeah, there's so many angles to this. Well, there's one person that if you're into politics, you probably should keep your mouth shut. Palmer Luckey, a Facebook employee, he was the founder of Oculus. He made a ton of money when it got bought by Facebook. Yeah, they sold for like $2 billion. So he ended up like with like $800 million. I mean, he ended up with a huge pile of money. As a result of the sale to Facebook, it turns out he used an arguably small portion of his wealth. It's a lot of money, about $10,000, to fund to support a political group. One that, if you've been following politics at all, in the last couple of months has sort of come up in it's gotten a little more attention, specifically through the Hillary Clinton campaign, bringing attention to Nimble America, part of the alt-right movement. And yeah, it turns out, Lucky
Nimble America. Should I even look this up?
Yeah, go for it. Hey, they're, so they have, like, this is crazy. It's like there's this internet thing going on that is just so internet-y and trolly that it's crazy. And there's, like, it depends on who you talk to. This is the thing. Like, there was the Pepe the Frog is a perfect example of part of this weird thing that's going on where Pepe the Frog is being accused. Like, he's this meme that's old and was kind of irreverent when it was created and became, as memes do, like a cultural thing that everybody kind of gets in on. And then there were a couple of guys, and I mean a couple of guys, like two guys, that decided it would be funny to try to convince the media that he was a neo-Nazi group had taken him over as their symbol. Yeah. Oh. And so they made posts, they put stuff out there, and then they built up websites, and then they would report that to news organizations and try to get the news organizations to just run with it, which they would, because, you know, it's like the people who are like, who's this 4chan man and why is he cracking in? Like, why is he being a, like, it's just the classic, the media doesn't know. They don't pay attention. They just want a story that will sell. So they just go with it, which this group of people loves. Like, they just, that's what there are individuals in this group. That's their entire thing, is to troll the media. Well, turns out, looks like Palmer Luckey is one of those guys. Like, his whole thing is, like, he likes to secretly fund and participate in these, like, trolling events. And they just, and, like, their current move right now, at least a portion of them, and I know that we're going to have listeners that will be like, no, I believe there are neo-Nazis that are doing this, which, you know, whatever, maybe they are. But clearly, at least a portion of them are just trolls that are messing with the media, which I think is hilarious personally. But yeah, this is not something the broader issue here is this is not something that that Facebook's going to be happy with, because the response has been like a lot of questions. Like, this is a controversial group that whether or not whether or not you agree with Trump or not, this is a controversial group that he's clearly involved in, not just fiscally, but like he's clearly involved it with them. And
It's beyond that someone convinced him.
He wrote a check because he thinks this is funny. Like, he's denying that he's like actively participating in posts and conversations and stuff. But there's a lot of evidence that's like, no, he clearly is. Which once again, mostly I think is just funny. So anyways, the bigger issue here and why it's important is because obviously he's like the founder of Oculus and he's a Facebook employee, and they were interviewing people who were developers for HTC, which the Vive, which is the biggest competitor to the Oculus right now, and asking them like,
yeah,
so does this change how you feel about Oculus? And they're like, honestly, yeah, I mean, we're having success on the Vive, and if we're going to be working with partners that we can't like, that are going to be drawing this kind of attention, we don't necessarily want to be doing this. It's not worth it to us. If we can focus on this successful platform, we will make choices like that. Developers that are already working with Oculus, they're like, you know, no, we're fine. This dude doesn't represent Oculus. It's his own political statement. We don't care. You know, and ultimately when you get into...
That's probably where... Ultimately,
exactly. Yeah. You know, but the truth of the matter is, and this is the takeaway for me, is you got to be careful what you say on the internet, man. Like, because you have no idea when you think you're just goofing off on Reddit, you know, being a bit of an annoying brat, but not doing any real damage. And all of a sudden it comes out and everybody really cares. And if it affects Facebook's ability to be successful with Oculus, he will not be working with Facebook. They will just do whatever they need to do to distance themselves from him. They think it's too important of a platform to mess up. And so this thing that he started and created, and honestly, like, it's not unfair to call him the father of modern VR. Like, before him, nobody was earnestly trying to do it. Now there are tons of companies that are building out these platforms, and he, you know, and so to lose all that because you thought it'd be funny to make irreverent, you know, Reddit posts would be kind of rough. And you know, I don't know. Like, I'm a big fan of the whole, like, if there's nothing that you do on your phone, there's nothing that you do online that you can assume will stay private forever. So if you're afraid of everybody finding out, you better not do it online.
Which is one of the reasons why everyone is so interested in that company we're not super fans of. Yeah, that's interesting. Especially when you're like a leadership role like that. Yeah. In a lot of ways, you got to be above reproach. Yeah. You got to be boring about it. And like you said, it's one thing to say, hey, I have opinions and I want to fund them and support them, like Peter Thiel. You know, you may not agree with him, but he cares about it and had the money to do something about it, just like Palmer. But man, you got to be careful.
You know, and it cuts both ways, honestly, because there are people that really question Tim Cook's involvement politically. And like, especially just, you know, it's one thing when he comes out or Apple comes out with like this is what we believe as a company, and these are the policies we're going to act as a result of it. It's a completely different thing when he starts to actively fund Hillary Clinton's campaign. I mean, it's like, and it's not even, I'm not even saying whether you should or not. I'm just saying it's a different thing, and you need to understand how that impacts your company and your role as a leader. And you need to be very careful when you do that, because fair or not, it will impact your business. And sometimes positively, sometimes negatively, you know, and.
Well, yeah, well, you've seen it sometimes where companies, they even get a knock for not saying anything. An example was back when, what was it, the government wanted Apple to crack the iPhone for them so they can get after that hacker, that thief or whatever it was. And a bunch of companies kind of just sidelined it. No comment. We're not going to say anything. And everyone got all upset about them. What the heck? You know? Come on. And so even, man, it's a tough landscape. It's really
hard.
And like you said, it can be weird too, where it could be a small but vocal subset of people that can also create a lot of dust for you, which,
man, it is hard.
Just get off the internet. You know,
it's overrated. The internet. Internet's done.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, interesting. We'll see how that plays out. That's probably not much more, but. So, guess what? I got an iPhone 7.
What? Plus. The plus. The plusy.
The plus. See, you can tell it's the plus. Because I have two cameras.
So many cameras.
That's the only way that you can tell it's a plus. Well, technically, if you have eagle eyes, you can tell that the antenna band is up on the top instead of going straight across the back.
Oh, yeah. If you compare it to my really ugly, look at those bands. It's sad. It's really...
Gosh, how do you...
It's so ugly. My phone's so ugly and old. I hate it.
Now, Jessie, on the other hand, she has her piano black. I mean, jet black iPhone. So that's her, which is actually really funny magnet. When she grabs it. Yeah, when she grabs it, I would say about half the time she flips it to the wrong side to start with. And it's like,
that's really funny, actually.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, that's awesome.
So have you got,
so it's,
as you say, have you gotten your $2 case yet?
No, not yet. I'm actually thinking about spending more than $2. So. But I'm also on the replace it once a year plan, so there's a part of me that's like,
ooh, geez. Going naked.
I don't know. Though I almost dropped it today in a parking lot. Like, I missed my pocket and was like, oh my
God. It was the second time that I dropped my phone that I went and bought a case. And I was like, I have two big scratches. I have two big dents on it. Yes. And it's from like the first 2 weeks. And I was like, I not everybody. But I need a case.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm leaning. And I, it's funny. So because of the timing of it, I do this event up at my alma mater. And it just, for whatever reason, it happens the week that I get a new phone. And I remember 2 years ago, that's how traumatic it was, getting out of the car to go to this event and dropping my phone on the asphalt. And I was just like, ugh. And I was just like distracted the entire night. I could rub my finger over it and be like, ugh. So that was what got me to get a case. So I was like super careful on this event. I was like, I'm not dropping this. It is in my pocket, not going anywhere. But yeah, I'm going to have to get a case, but we'll see. Let's see here. So there's a cool video. We're going to link to it. It's called A Speed Test Comparison of Every iPhone Ever Made. And so this guy goes through and he opens them all up at the same time. He opens a couple apps at the same time, runs different speed tests. He opens the camera. And then he also shows picture quality, video quality, and what's the other one? I think it's like Touch ID, okay. I think, is what he ends up like showing how fast they all work, relatively speaking. And it's a pretty cool video. I'm kind of like, wow, he spent way too much time. but he has them all. And interestingly, the 7 is not really as fast as the 6S when it comes to starting up and the camera and things really? Like that. Yeah, I mean, we're talking fractional seconds.
No way,
but,
yeah,
for whatever reason, the 6S is a little bit faster. Now, the Plus, like the 7 Plus, for whatever reason, is actually seems significantly slower than previous, like all the 7, just the 7, no Plus, that one's by far the fastest. But there's something about the 7 Plus that makes it slower, though it's also a lot cooler and they're a lot louder too. Oh, that was the other thing. He tested the
volume. Wait, so when you say slower, I mean like opening apps and just overall running, it's actually slower than the 6S?
It was turning on for the first time and like opening the camera.
Those are the two things it was slower on?
A proxy for... That was all I really tested. I mean, he did like other benchmarking
things. Okay, because I was going to say, because that seems absurd to me, but... I don't know. It's a complicated. You know, it might be one of those things where it's a complicated camera module. It has two cameras.
Yeah, with two cameras in it, right? That's on one hand, you should be crazy impressed.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I wonder what the deal is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, but it's
fun. It works good.
It's cool. I don't know. It just says iPhone on the back. It doesn't have like the number and the S
thing on it. They're finally beyond that.
Yeah, which I think, because I think
mine doesn't. Mine doesn't say 6. Mine just says S.
It just says S. Interesting. Yeah, so I obviously don't have that, but it's fun. It's fast. The button not being an actual button is kind of cool. It's just, it feels different. It feels fine. And then I don't really miss the headphone jack at all.
Why is that?
I didn't think I would.
Is that because you're cool or?
I think so. Well, all I listen to is on my phone and on my iPad, and I can plug the headphone jack into my iPad and it works. And so I don't really have anything else. So,
gotcha. Okay. I don't think it'd be that big of a deal. I'd have to get one or two of the adapters, but I don't think I'd have an issue with it. Especially because most of the time I use Bluetooth. Like honestly, I use it in my car, and I use it.
In the Jeep, it's a plug-in into the radio, but it goes right into the Lightning. Now, in the Prius, that one actually was an old school jack, but I just took my little adapter and put it on there. And now it's,
cool.
It's converted.
Well, yeah. So
I got it. It's cool. Still waiting on the watch. Cool.
Well, there was a lot going on this week with Apple. Obviously, this is the first week that everybody's had the new iPhone, so people were talking about it. And there was an interview with the Timothy Cook of Apple fame and asking them about what's the deal with Apple and virtual reality and stuff, and their big takeaway was that he was basically saying, hey, AR isn't the future, or no, so AR is the future of Apple. He goes, VR is kind of cool, but I think it has a niche a niche like appeal, whereas AR
everybody.
AR he thinks just has a much wider appeal.
Oh, VR. I'm sorry.
Virtual reality.
So he thinks VR is a niche, whereas AR is going to be more
right. Mainstream. We're like so he's basically I think everybody's like so we're like VR would be for like video gaming and specific types of media. For movies and stuff, whereas AR will everybody will use it.
For just enjoying life is really all
exactly just for completely allowing yourself to finally exist as you want to exist and have a fulfilling.
I wonder if you could it'd be really interesting to have like a virtual reality vacation, and I'm thinking something beyond like holodeck ish, but like. You're just like, man, I really just want to go to Paris this weekend. And you just slap on a pair of goggles and you're just there the entire time. That'd be awesome.
I cannot tell you how excited I am. I feel bad because I'm going to a wedding. I'm going to be a best man for a wedding on the 7th of October. And it's the 14th of October that I'm so excited for. Because you know what happens on the 14th, a week later? I get my PlayStation VR finally.
Yes.
And it's like I got cash. I have literal cash stashed away so I don't accidentally spend it. So I can I'm so ready. I'm so ready. So excited. But so basically the broader point here is like obviously I was wrong about there being any AR in the on the iPhone.
Yes.
kind of. I would argue, and I feel like this is a completely valid argument, that the bokeh effect is, by definition, bokeh effect is, by definition, like AR. And specifically the type of AR that I was talking about, where it's like you're doing a depth map, you're differentiating between the objects in the foreground and the background, and you're adding things in between them. But it's not the kind of AR like I meant. And it's definitely not an API for other developers to leverage and use. So I feel like I'll take the slap on the wrist and be like, yeah, that didn't come. But the deal here is that it's clearly coming. Like this is where they're going. Apple has said, hey, yeah, we're definitely doing this. Tim Cook has said that's definitely where we're going. That's what we're looking at in his way of saying it.
Yeah, in the exact same way he said wearables are very interesting.
Exactly, yeah. And then, you know, a couple months later they came out with the or a year later they came out with the watch. The Apple's Phil Schiller kept calling it a telephoto lens. It's the 56 millimeter equivalent. The reality is it's actually more like a portrait lens. In addition to giving the phone an effective 2x optical zoom, the dual camera enables a long list of software capabilities that should result in notably better photos for most users. That's interesting and very useful. But what interests me, is in this article, the author, more about the hardware is the fact that Apple could use the dual camera to capture information about objects in space in front of the camera. The two cameras allow for the device to capture and create depth mapping information, which is what they're doing to do the bokeh effect, where they're using the depth map and then they're just blurring things that are in the background. And when the developer build of the new operating system, it's included in it as a beta, and it basically you put it out there and it like it tells you if you're too close or too far from something. And it's easy to imagine Apple building that into building in an API to allow developers to access that automatically in the next couple of years. Right now,
Give you relative distances to things.
Or just produce a depth map. Just give us the depth map. That's all I want. They were talking about how I was looking at the APIs and stuff because all the APIs are now out for the dual camera. And you can take a picture of one or the other, or you can do the mixed picture where they'll do the optical zoom and stuff from an API perspective. So it's like at this point, you can't like take two pictures at the same time. You have to take a picture with one, then take a picture with the other. And then you would have to write the software or use your software to do whatever fancy, you know, 3D-ifying of it that you'd want, or depth mapping. But, you know, it's clearly they're moving in that direction. My fear was that they wouldn't even give you, like, they wouldn't give developers specific access to one or the other. So I suspect you'll start to see apps come out in the next couple of, within the year, that are at least heading in this direction, showing Apple that, yeah, developers want this and users are interested in it. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, this is coming and pretty exciting.
Yeah, maybe you'll see things like an example. I don't think they'll actually do it, but Pokemon Go, where now that Pokemon's.
Yeah, exactly, which would be pretty cool. And so it also turns out that.
Or you throw a ball at it and it hits the other objects, which would be interesting. That'd
actually be really fun. And then to even push it even further, Apple hired two engineers from different companies, one Oculus, one from Magic Leap. Okay.
Oh, Magic Leap,
they're done. Over. So it's, you know, it's it they've made strategic acquisitions, thank you, of AR companies. They're hiring AR engineers. They have a dual camera module on their flagship phone that does depth map.
Like
I think we're going in the right direction. It just doesn't seem unreasonable to me. So I don't know. It's cool. It's exciting. Cameras, they're a big deal, James. They're a really big deal.
But they're doing it on the phones and iPads, not on
anything
sunglasses.
Else. Not on anything else. Just some of the best consumer grade cameras you can buy. Not on sunglasses, but you know who?
Yeah, but there's a problem with those consumer cameras. Because It puts a piece of technology between you and the memory. I believe that was an argument that I can't remember
Evan Spiegel.
His name, that good old Spiegel made when they were like, technically, there's still something between you and the memory. It's just a little more translucent.
So, for those of you who don't know, because this came out, so the deal was it actually was supposed to come out on Monday, which would give them all week to kind of push this new announcement. But
he was thinking about our podcast.
Yes.
And decided to
that's the big thing is that it leaked and information was coming out. And so I will give Snapchat credit for this. It's a pretty good sense of the media to say, you know what, we don't want the rumors all weekend. We're just gonna make the press release on Friday. I think because there's a part of me that's like, why would it have been such a big deal to just let the rumors go all weekend long? Like, all it would have done was build curiosity, but it wouldn't have given facts very long to get out. I don't know. So anyways, but they released a press release making their big announcement. Number one, Snapchat is no longer Snapchat, the company. They are now Snap Inc. And Snapchat is only one piece of the Snap Incorporated empire.
It's a large piece.
Yeah.
From a user perspective, not from necessarily a revenue perspective.
It's the only thing they're making money on. and so now they also announced that they are adding to their illustrious hardware catalog that also includes ice trays and branded beach towels and plushies. Yeah, I'm not even joking. Like, you can go to like their thing, and they have like a list of their hardware, and I love this company.
Where do you go to Snapchat?
I don't even remember where I found it.
Does that still work? Geofilters, ads, download.
It's probably Snap. No, spell it right, Matthew. Snapchat Store. Let's do that. Let's just Google it. Snapchat.
Snapchat.
Okay, there we go. I'll find it. I can't find it. Oh well. It's gone. Over.
It was ephemeral, it turns out.
they're going to be selling a pair of $130 sunglasses.
Which for sunglasses is a reasonable price. At the airport, yeah.
Actually, $100 sunglasses, like if you're going to go and grab a pair of Oakleys or Ray-Bans or whatever, $100 to $150 isn't crazy for those brand of sunglasses. I think it's kind of crazy, but I don't wear sunglasses. I wear baseball hats. So do with that what you will. Yeah,
it's true, huh?
So they, it's funny every once in a while. I'm always
thought about this.
People are like, "Oh, I need my sunglasses. It's so bright out." I'm like, "It's not that bright out." And they're like, "You're wearing a hat, man." I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right. I remember now." So these new specs. They call them spectacles. I like to call them snapticles, and.
Snapticles.
I know. Basically what happens is they are sunglasses that allow you to fully immerse in the world while snapping. And to say what that basically means is they're sunglasses with a camera built into the frames.
And it's a video camera, right? Like, it's not pictures from what I've read.
Yeah, it's 10 seconds.
And it doesn't actually auto Snapchat it. You have to download them and then upload them as later.
Well, yeah, that would require API that Apple doesn't give you access to.
Okay. Tell me when it's ready.
You will never be ready for that, James, because they're never going to sell very many of these, and it's not a product category that will continue on. That being said, this thing is so ridiculous. I want one. Oh my gosh. This is like, and I love how serious everybody's treating this. Like, I'm sorry.
Why do they have two camera lenses?
It doesn't have two camera lenses. One is like a touch sensor with a little couple of LEDs in it. Because this is the idea, right? So everybody hated the Google Glass.
That's confusing.
The whole glass hole thing. People were upset about it. And one of the big complaints was that it wasn't really clear when the camera was on. And people were afraid that you were video recording them. And so this one, it's like when it's on, the LEDs are on. They are quite bright, and they let you know, oh, you are being snapped right now. You're being recorded. It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, so it can transfer data over either one of those, which is, you know, cool enough, I guess. It's a 115-degree lens, and it captures it as a circular image. And Evan Spiegel is talking about how you're not just experiencing a video. You're experiencing an experience you already had, which is, I know. I love it. I love it. He's such a, oh gosh. So yeah.
What did I was reading something where it's, you know how it's got the picture of him in a bunch of the news articles wearing it. And they were like, they're like, oh, I'm trying to remember the word. I mean, it was like, he already makes it feel like kind of a...
Oh, yeah, he totally does. It's just
like, they're like, what the heck, man?
It's over. Cool. Yeah, but it's...
I'm trying to figure out why all the people in the pictures with the... If you go to spectacles.com, by the way, is the place. It's like no one's wearing a shirt. It's really
weird.
Well,
because they're trying to...
I'm getting old.
They're trying to make it this... So this is the strategy, and it's not a bad one. The whole idea is they're trying to make it this aspirational brand where they realize that they've got kind of a dumb group of... That's so unfair. Their goal is to get teenagers and young adults to buy this thing, and they want to make it this cool... product category, very much a fashion statement that people will buy it and will want to buy it. So they're going to try to make it as cool as possible. That's like, cool is the way to go with this. I just think it's so dumb. Like
the video is interesting, man. They keep messing with the what's a picture like. They're all like, the rectangle is from the past when people used to print. And so we're going to do a circle. Which I'm like, yeah, okay. Screens and televisions are still rectangles, dude. Like, it's
well,
okay.
And honestly, like, if I were, you know, for me, if I want something more immersive, there is an entire product category that is emerging right now that we've already talked about once that I think is a big deal for this sort of thing. But it's like, this is not VR. This is not a can't. Like, this is a step back in my ability to take a good, convenient picture. It's not connected to the internet. It's not. Like, I have to move it from.
Well, it says here that you can wirelessly add your snaps to memories on Snapchat. So.
Well, it's. Okay. No. I know what's going on here. Yeah, you open up the app and then it automatically starts uploading and syncing it to the app.
So let me get this straight. I take a picture and it's got my memories and things are great. I feel like it's Total Recall. And then. And then I have to pull out my phone and turn on the app to wirelessly sync it. Missing the moment, or just do it later.
I mean, there's some validity to that, but this is the other thing that gets me, James.
Google Glass was so cool. I'm upset that did not.
Don't forget that you're going to have to charge your sunglasses every day.
Yeah, but they got the case for that.
I mean, still doesn't like. Well, and this is the. I wasn't entirely clear on this, and I'm not exactly sure how the because they talk about how it holds enough charge for the day, and they've got this like sunglasses thing, or this case thing. So is it
cool.
The sunglasses?
Dang it, I'm getting sucked in.
Is it the sunglasses last for a day, and the and the case is four charges built into it? Or does the case last for a day and you have to charge your sunglasses four times to use it? I was not clear on that. I'm hoping it's the former and not the latter, because that would just be foolish. But this is my thing. Like, okay, I get that they're trying to like – that this is a bad idea from a technology perspective. It's a low quality camera. It is in,
what?
It is.
Is it? Do you know what it is?
They haven't talked about it, but it's not like you're, but naturally. You're not, yeah, exactly. But it's not going to be competing with the iPhone camera or the Samsung camera or the HTC camera or the, you know, I'll keep going on. Like camera sensor technology.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing, what is it? HD video. I don't know, man.
You know, I'm not saying that it's not going to be a decent camera. I'm just saying it's not going to be a great camera. And the thing is, you can get a great...
It's a video camera, remember? Well, it's not actually taking photos.
And they want...
So,
okay, fair enough. But it's like, you... okay, this is one...
And it's ephemeral. You only just need 10 seconds.
Fair enough.
Like, you're not going to be...
I'm just saying... This is going to fall into the same category as the Apple like watch that people complain about all the time, but I think with more validity, which is this, that you don't need it. And I've made the argument that I think that having cellular built into the Apple Watch is going to be a big differentiator. That will probably be when I upgrade, is when they do that. Because to me, that actually fundamentally changes how I use it, because I can leave my phone behind in a real way. Whereas with this, you can leave your phone behind unless you want to upload it and, you know, share it. Oh, then you do need your phone. And so it's just one step back. It becomes entirely a fashion piece at this point. And like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm some fashion guru and I can tell whether this is going to be popular or cool or not. But this is my biggest takeaway from all this, is that Snapchat, if they're successful, and I really doubt they're going to be successful with this, but if they're successful with this, they're going to have incredible competition. Because like you said, Google still wants to make the whole Google Glass thing works. And if there's anything here that can really make it a valid like product category, Google's going to come with as much ferocity as they can. Facebook thinks VR is the future. Exactly, like this is the type of thing that Facebook wants to see work. Like, this is a much bigger industry, and all they did was put a camera module in a pair of sunglasses. And the
they're changing the world.
And the funniest part about this,
they're owning the camera experience.
The funniest part about this is they didn't even put like the photoreactive lenses in it. So if you wear it, you know, out to a concert, like most people want to do, you're wearing sunglasses. And as a guy who, during periods of his 20s, would wear sunglasses into bars because I thought it made me look cool, because it did make me look cool. I'll tell you what, it's really inconvenient. Like, it's just constantly in your way because you can't see anything. This is just such a classic dumb product. The only thing I can say about this, and
it's a classic dumb product.
And the only thing I can say about this is that Snapchat earlier said they view themselves.
Man, you have feelings about sunglasses. This is interesting.
It's like bringing up. It's just a whole mix of stupid stuff that I think too much about. The one thing I will say about this is that the company is really, they have stated that they view themselves as a camera company, not a media company,
Yeah, because they're very much headed down the media company path.
And we've talked about this, that they've done that the current state of the Snapchat app is an impressive camera app. Like it has some features that are remarkably good by anybody's standard. Like, and this is another step in them direction saying, no, we're going to, like, the first piece of hardware that they ever build is a camera. And like, so I'll say this about Snapchat. If the one thing you really need as a company to be successful is a core competency and a focus on your core competency, they at least seem to believe that they know what that is and they're going to stay focused on it. So, you know, when Amazon came out with their stupid Fire phone that nobody bought and they completely canceled on it, I was a big advocate for just stay the course, see it through, innovate, come out with a better platform next time. I think Snapchat won't do that, because I think this is going to be a real embarrassing flop.
Well, they've said that it's a toy. Yeah. So they're talking about limited quantities, and I mean, they're hedging.
Right, and this just feels like, you know what, you know, my problem with this is it feels like when Rovio got into, like, you know, we've built this really successful game in Angry Birds, and what's next? They didn't successfully go out and build the next gaming platform. They didn't put together a team of engineers and say, hey, we understand what makes games fun, and we're gonna build another piece of intellectual property that's going to be successful. They tried, but they didn't succeed. Where they succeeded was building, like, having China build really, really cheap stuff that leveraged the intellectual property that they already had. And that's what this feels like to me. It doesn't feel like, you know, it's going to be like a good pair of sunglasses are going to run you about $100. A decent camera is going to run you a bad portable camera is going to run you like $200. So, like, where does this fit in that spectrum? It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
I know, and you keep throwing me off because you keep saying camera. It's a video camera, like, which is genuinely,
different. You keep saying that, but I'm not sure it is. It's the same module.
It is. You can get away with a much worse picture quality.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, camera. Fair enough. But you still run into this issue of, it's like you're in this weird territory of, you're charging, like, if it were to be really good, you're not charging enough. For it to be like wide scale successful, you're charging too much for what it is. I don't know. I as a company, it's like, to me, I come back and I say, like, what do you want to do as a company to be really successful? Like, what is this? How does this move you forward? You know, it doesn't seem very judicious as a first piece of hardware. It seems like a gimmick because that's what it is. And I don't know. It just leads me down the road to, like, saying best case scenario for Snap Inc. is that they're Twitter, which ain't a bad place to be. But, you know, Evan Spiegel thinks he's Mark Zuckerberg, or thinks he's Stephen P. Jobs.
No, he thinks he's Steve Jobs.
It's just wrong. Like, it's crazy.
Well, it's funny. I have a funny feeling that had podcasts existed back when Apple was getting started, I don't think we would have liked Steve Jobs. I think we would have had the same disdain because of his behavior and the way he acts and treats his employees and thinks of himself. Now, a big difference between Evan Spiegel and Steve Jobs is that we have a podcast because of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that's that is a significant difference.
I don't think you and I are going to be taking pictures because of Evan Spiegel or some new thing that's going to come along. Slight difference there in terms of grandioso and, like, literally changing the world. But what drives you nuts is the way that he talks and the way that he acts and the way other people talk about you. They're like, he's the real deal. He's legit. And you know what? Good for them for spurring Facebook on the $3 billion buyout. And, like, he's got her going and they're doing great things and they're going to change the world. And you're like, oh, okay. Guess it's just like this whole, their lenses is a form of augmented reality, right, like we've talked about, and they're genuinely cool.
They're impressive.
And for me, I'm like, dude, that's where to double down in the AR stuff. But they don't want to. And I don't know. It's like, he's trying really hard, even changing the name, shortening it. You know, that's a Jobsian thing.
It's such a Jobs and thing.
You're like, man, you're moving a little fast and you're not quite changing the world yet, and I get we'll be willing to put up with you being a not nice person if you're going to change the world. Which, you know, Zuckerberg, when he first got started, was not the nicest guy in the world, and I realized the movie wasn't totally, like, real. But from what I understand, there were enough grains of truth.
Well, you know, and
where they weren't stretching. And I know that, heck, even Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they weren't, like, the nicest guys around. Now, Bill Gates was also having to be, like, a nerd's nerd. Yeah. And so, like, you have that going for him, but, like, fiercely competitive. I know Larry Ellison's kind of, like, out there. It's interesting, Larry Page and...
Sergey Brin. Right?
Yeah, and Sergey Brin. I actually think they're genuinely nice guys. Yeah. I think, like, they're not mean. They just want to just change the world and make it a better place. I think Elon Musk, too, he's not a mean person, but he's got huge dreams and he's going to push people to achieve them, but not like, doesn't have that mean streak.
Elon Musk has the weird characteristic of he actually thinks the death of humanity is nigh and he's trying to save humanity.
A sense of urgency.
Yeah. He's a superhero hurting you for your own sake. That is how he sees himself. And there's a sense of, like, you know, I don't know if the situation's as dire as he thinks it is, but there's at least enough truth where I'll give him a little leeway. You know what? It's funny. It's funny that you bring it up because I've never been like, I'm fully on board with the idea that, yeah, Steve Jobs was a prick when he was young. Like, everything I've read suggests that, yeah, he went through a phase and as much as he grew up and everything, he grew up and he talked about that. He grew up. He was young and he was immature.
Well, and I think it helped too. I'm going to cut you off and let you keep going. Like, he also was massively offset by Steve Wozniak, which I think, like, somehow he saw that, and Wozniak, such a teddy bear and nice guy. You're like, okay, one Steve's not nice, but man, the other one's pretty good.
Yeah. That helps a lot. But I think one of the big things here was that, like, and Zuckerberg, like, it's hard for me to put myself in that position. How would I have thought about Apple or about Steve Jobs at the time? But it's easy for me to think about Zuckerberg that way because I've grown up with Zuckerberg. He's 2 years older than me. Like, I was into Facebook only a year or two after he started Facebook. I was following it and paying attention, and we were having debates about it and everything. And I've never disliked Zuckerberg like I dislike Evan Spiegel. And it's because Facebook is always...
Well, I remember it was always like, it was Facebook the company. We were like, I don't feel like their motives are totally virtuous. Zuckerberg was leader of it. And so he kind of gets wrapped into it.
This is the problem is Facebook was on its way to becoming a utility. It was an unavoidable part of life. So the fact that we didn't like the motivations and actions of the company was infuriating because you couldn't avoid get away with it. There was this angst that went along with it and a frustration that went along with Facebook because it's like, we depend on you. There, you have some sort of a responsibility to us now, or at least that's what we felt. And that's what we continue to feel. Whereas with Snapchat, and the reason why I dislike Evan Spiegel so much is because I don't think he's important and I don't think he ever will be. he thinks he is. Which drives me
He's engaged
crazy.
To his girlfriend now. But, you know, I was also thinking about it. It's like Jeff Bezos. I think, again, he's a nice guy, driven, going to push people. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's got good intentions. I think that's one of the things that we like about Satya Nadella at Microsoft as well. Like, that guy just seems
super
like...
nice. I'd love to work for him. Yeah. I feel like, you know what I feel like the problem with him would be? Is, like, he seems super nice, and then I would do something wrong, and he would give me the old, kind of disappointed in you. And I'd be like... I feel like he could do that.
I don't know.
I
feel like Tim Cook is in that exact same boat.
Yeah.
Where it's like he's almost too much.
When he gets something upset with you, like, he would give you just the straight up, like, I think Tim Cook would give you, like, you'd realize you messed up, and he would just be like, okay, I need somebody else. And it just wouldn't even be like, he wouldn't be angry. He would just be like, I just need somebody else. Just next person. And he'd be like, I just threw away my entire career.
I think that's how he would be. Well, I know the one story, because everyone was like, oh, I don't know. And the story that everyone shared was where they had some sort of manufacturing snafu in China. and they were in the meeting and some guy was telling them about it. And he was like, well, this is unacceptable. You need to go over there now and fix it. Yeah. And like the meeting went on and 5 minutes later and he cut him off and went, what are you still doing here?
Yeah, exactly. Leave. Exactly.
Go.
He's not mad. He's just focused. He doesn't seem like the sort of guy who loses his head at all. But which is kind of terrifying.
I think Evan Spiegel loses his head. I think he is.
And this is my last point because I as much fun as it is just whine about personalities. Like there's this bigger issue, and this I think TechCrunch really summed it up great with this article, and it's tech camera manufacturers. You're still missing the point. Be better. Okay. I'll read this first paragraph. Spotted at Photokina, the world's largest photography trade show, a professional photographer taking a photo, then taking a picture off the back of the camera to share the photograph on Facebook. It's not an unusual occurrence, but it serves as the perfect parable on how vigorously the camera manufacturers have really messed themselves up. So basically, the picture is this. A dude took a really cool picture with his camera, put his camera in his lap, and then took his phone, took a picture of the camera, of the picture he just took on this really nice camera, and posted it to Facebook. He didn't take the picture, the really cool picture, off the camera and say, hey, this is how great the photo is. Now, Granted, it's the hardware that you're taking the picture with.
Is he planning on selling that photo later?
I don't think so.
Because I could see, like, that's a legitimate reason to not just post the photo
online. I don't think so. I think that he's a journalist, so the idea is that he's taking...
Says professional photographer.
Oh. Okay. Well, yeah. I see what you're saying.
The argument
that's being made here, and the reason why this ties into Snapchat, is because the biggest problem that the camera industry is having right now, and it's the thing that GoPro has been really, really struggling with. They just announced a new set of cameras, and they've got all sorts of new technological features. And the biggest thing that people are talking about that the new camera comes along with isn't just that it's the camera module. The camera module is still pretty good, but that's not the differentiator. It's this new technology that comes along with it, a lot smarter, a lot more Wi-Fi, automatic features for automatic uploading. And that is specifically something that's lacking with Snapchat's new camera module that they're building, is this entire issue of what we don't want just cameras anymore. We want cameras connected to the internet. And that totally. Is the most important thing. And the more steps you put between that, even if they're small, that's a friction point that people aren't going to want to deal with. I read an article about how this dude was complaining about Apple's Touch ID and how he can't use the Touch ID because it's like the ridges on his fingerprints are too small. And so he's got to type in the code. And iOS 10 adds like a quarter second to how quickly he can type in his code, and it drives him crazy. And you're like, Snapchat is selling you a product to add friction. And I just don't get it.
No, they're taking friction away. They're moving you closer to the event. So you don't have to be distracted.
They're selling $130 fashion statement, and they will sell some based on that. And that's why I want one, James, because I think it'd be really funny. I'd wear them everywhere.
You could get kicked out of places.
I know. I'd be like, what? I just, whatever. It's a, what a dumb company.
Oh my gosh, your hatred.
When I was in England, I was hanging out with some friends out there. And it's like, honestly, I've spent time with them, but they're like, they're still relatively new friends. I've just only been friends with them over the course of a couple of years. So there's that weird, like, total actual face-to-face time isn't a lot. But there's this sense of kindredship because it's been over the course of years. And somehow we got onto the whole, like, Instagram, Facebook, and, like, everything. And they were like, so are you on the Snapchat thing? Are you using Snapchat? What do you think about Snapchat? And I was like, I had this like gut check of like, okay, do I want to go into my thing with these people? And I like, and I backed down and I was like, you know, I just don't use it that much. It's fine. I have friends that use it, but I'm not that into it.
You know, I have not turned it on my new phone.
Really?
Yet. I haven't actually signed in on it. Yeah.
That's interesting. One of our uncles asked me the other night. He's like, did you see my snaps? And I was like, no, I didn't. I didn't watch.
Did you specifically tag me?
Well, he did. That's the funny part. I was like, I got the notifications. Like, they go away if you don't watch them soon enough. I was like, they go away once I watch them. He's like, no, they only last for 24 hours. He's like, no, you sent them to me. So they will stay there until I watch them, and then they will go away. And I will put it off as long as I can at this point, because I just have, I don't want to encourage this behavior, okay?
Get them on the
Instagram stories.
Instagram stories. Yeah. That's what I use now. I'm all about that. I did one the other day. It's like just sitting around doing nothing. Check me out.
I'm going to be so bummed in like 20, 30 years where everybody's going to be buying like Snap DSLRs. Be like, oh, I was so wrong.
I think you'll be okay.
Wait.
Well, if it does take off, Google's, like you said, it's instantly
there's
going to
be
jump
so
in
much.
Have
if
it
there's,
connect seamlessly.
If there's any, yeah, exactly. If there's any.
Well, like you said, AR is clearly the future. We're just going to have a camera on
this thing.
Anyways,
that's the other thing. It's just like, you got two camera. Like, give me 3D. Whatever. I don't care.
Oh, man. All right. Let's. Oh my word. Wow.
How deep are we in?
All right. Let's change. Yeah, what are we? It's 9:20 now, so we're an hour 10 in. All right, so I'm a little over the halfway spot, which I guess we're doing okay. But let's change gears. And let's talk about almost news.
Yeah, right. And weirdly reminiscent of the same taco we just talked about. So did you know that Salesforce is big enough to buy Twitter?
Huh. I
didn't
know. Salesforce.
I didn't know that.
Or Twitter's small.
It's a little bit of both. So technically speaking, Salesforce is not actually big enough to buy Twitter outright. They have about half the value of Twitter cash on hand. So if Snapchat if Salesforce was to buy Twitter, they would need to raise the other half of the capital somehow. Either through stock options of their own company or taking debt out or something like that. So it would be a big deal, but evidently that's exactly the same conversation they were having when they were in talks to buy LinkedIn before Microsoft swept in and made it too expensive. So it's happens. They are not above buying a large company like that, but yeah, that's part of the things that I learned this week. Was that turns out Salesforce is actually kind of a big deal. So, I've done more research on Salesforce than I've ever done this week. Because I was like, I'm not even sure I know what Salesforce really sells. Like, I know it's cloud computing, but what is that? Like, okay, I feel like I gotta get into this. And then the other thing that I learned this week is that Twitter's for sale. which, you know, maybe burying the headline there, but I feel like one of these companies is going to be around in, you know, a couple of months and the other is going to be a subsidiary. So maybe Salesforce is the more important conversation. But yeah, Twitter, Jack Dorsey's ugly stepchild, it turns out, they are having conversations with a number of different potential buyers. Salesforce is the one everybody's been kind of talking about, but Verizon's in the mix, kind of unsurprisingly, the place where companies go to die. Google has been in talks with Twitter, which I think is probably your top. I have no proof of the idea that Larry Page and Jack Dorsey, the CEOs of each company, are friends, but I have a feeling they'd be friends. I don't know why. I think I think Larry Page has been around a bit longer than Jack Dorsey, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I feel like they could get along. But yeah, that's been the rumor this week, is that, you know, Jack came on 2 years ago as an interim CEO before becoming the full-time CEO again. And he's had about 2 years to turn the company around. And the current feeling in the investors and everybody is that Twitter hasn't turned around, despite them having the NFL and live streaming the presidential debates and all the other things that they're doing. So it might be time to, sell the stock and, move on, do something else, and allow the company to become a feature in a much larger product category of a different company.
I was just looking at my equity stake in it. My total return so far is 55%.
That's negative. Bummer. It's a bummer. So you bought when it was high.
Even with the 22% gain.
Yeah. Well, back whenever all the tech companies.
Etsy's only down 52%.
Back when all the tech companies took a dive, that was Twitter got it.
Lending Club is plus 70, so I got that. Called one out of three.
That's almost good. Yeah, when Twitter took a dive, it was just, that was like a hard reset. I think there was this real perception of the fact that like, this is Twitter's value and that they were really overinflated for a long time. And, you know, and this is where it's at. And yeah. And the fact that like rumors of a sale are making their price rocket is a bad news bears for.
I don't totally get how it's a feature of a bigger ecosystem.
So that's actually been one of the big questions, is what does Twitter have? And the answer has been they've got data, and it's specifically current news, trending news. And they have data in a way that, like the example that I would give is like if Google bought them, for example, people are adding information to it. If you had an AI that was parsing all the new information, not just looking at hashtags, but looking at all the data, trying to gain larger pieces of information, then you could be getting really salient, like current news that you could be then turning into way better Google search results and very, very, very topical. And the example being that like there are services that track earthquakes via Twitter, because if you are far enough away from the epicenter, you can get an alert. The people who feel the earthquake, if they tweet right away and before the shockwave of the earthquake hits you, you can get an alert. Oh, there's an earthquake coming in your area. And wow. That sort of like instant news information, whether it's Arnold Palmer dying this evening or something crazy that, you know, Hillary Clinton faints on stage at the presidential debates or whatever things you can see coming. Those sorts of, I don't think it's going to happen, but man, would that be exciting?
Nah, she'll be wild.
Yeah.
Oh, if she does. Oh, yeah. It's over. Just, but oh, there's yeah. No way.
You lose
no
your way. Mind. But we,
yeah, okay, I guess. I think Google is probably the best option, which have they been on the table before? Because I think it could help replace their Google Plus stuff, and they can integrate their Google Photos with it. They can integrate, they can better integrate YouTube and I don't know. I feel like they can make it super rich. Obviously, they can get it even deeper into their search stuff and really juice up their search. Twitter search is not.
Yeah, that's honestly, it's a two-way street. Like Twitter search would be better served by Google, and the pipe of information coming in would serve Google search well, I think.
I think Google would really like getting its hands on Periscope and infusing some YouTube DNA into that. I think the live streaming event things, I think, is interesting. I think they would move all that over to YouTube.
Yeah, it should be fine. But
and then let Twitter be a component of YouTube live streaming. Like, honestly, it'd be cool. Like, right now, we're on a Google Hangouts Live. If there was a tweet stream,
exactly.
It would be probably pretty quiet, but it would be cool to have that. And then have those turn into comments.
Yeah, whatever, exactly.
Afterwards or something. I don't know. I could see it. That makes the most sense. I don't see Microsoft showing any interest in it. I don't see Apple. I don't see Amazon. Maybe Facebook. Nah. But I think I'd be shocked. Plus, there'd be other... See,
that's the argument for...
Maybe Snapchat.
Yeah, jeez. That's the argument for Salesforce coming
But
forth.
Salesforce? Well,
see, so the idea that behind Salesforce is, why did Microsoft buy LinkedIn? And the biggest answer has been, look, we've got a giant cloud platform, and that sort of data is really, really useful for us. It's a huge user, and we're basically buying the information so we can mine all that data. That's what we want. And Salesforce is similar to the Azure of platform. Like, that's their thing. That's their bell horn. And totally. So basically they're saying, look, we didn't get LinkedIn. That's what we wanted. We didn't get it. So we're going to go for Twitter instead, and we'll get a giant user base with just a ton of information, and we can turn this into something else. That would have to be part of a larger strategy for Salesforce as they move forward.
Yeah,
but I see that happening. It's not ridiculous to think that that would happen, James. You can say that. You can just fluff it off as though it's ridiculous, but it's not.
It's a little ridiculous.
It's completely rational.
I don't see Twitter going
there.
Yeah, I can see Salesforce wanting them. I don't see Twitter being willing.
Yeah, and the financing thing of it. I don't know. I think it's a stretch for Twitter. I think the worst case for Salesforce, should I say. I think the worst case scenario, and probably most likely, though, is Verizon. It just feels like one of those...
They're the ones who bought Yahoo, right?
Bought AOL too, right?
Which, that was an interesting... I meant to mention this earlier with Snap, so I'll just say it real quick. Someone did a fun little history timeline of Yahoo, talking about their value. And then in that timeline was when Google tried to sell themselves to Yahoo for $3 billion and they passed. And then when Google tried to sell again to them for like $20 billion and they passed. And then when Yahoo was offered to be sold to Microsoft for $50 billion and they passed. And then how they're now being sold for $5 And they're like,
You always think it's going to turn around. You think you think you got the magic juice, and you just, there's a big difference between media companies and technology companies. And unfortunately, I think that's one of the things you're seeing with Twitter, is that they never really turned it into more of a platform. And they didn't pioneer technology.
I see signs of it now.
I think it would take Jack Dorsey 10 years, and I just don't think he has the interest or the bandwidth, so
fair enough.
I don't know. But that wasn't the only rumored sale this week. Turns out the suspicion, and I think this is almost certainly true, even though both parties are categorically denying it. Apple was talking about buying McLaren, or at least part of it. For these of you that don't know nothing about McLaren, they're a British car company. They make supercars. They make like ultra expensive sports cars. Were you going to say something?
Yeah.
I feel like you were going to say something.
No, just they're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What is McLaren's cheapest car? Do you know that answer?
Oh man. Wait, sorry.
Let's see here.
You're kind of breaking
cheapest out. Cheapest car. I just want to know what McLaren's cheapest car is. It's a 540C. Wait. It's 126,000 pounds.
200,000 pounds?
That's their... No, 126.
Yeah. Yeah. They sell $1 million car, too. I mean, this is a ridiculous car.
Looks nice.
Yeah. They're really big into Formula One racing. They're quite successful there. They do that quite well. Yeah, they're a cool company.
What makes their car so awesome? Like, worth that much?
Can you do me a favor and turn off your video feed? You're lagging.
Oh yeah, sure. Goodbye.
Then say that again.
What makes Yeah. What makes their cars so awesome? Why are they so expensive?
Because they're real fast. Really fast. They have super high performance. They're Formula One cars. They're not Formula One cars, but they're straight up race cars. They don't sell. And they are street legal race cars in that they meet the very minimum requirements for you to own a race car that you can take on the street, which is why people own them.
Yeah, I guess it says here it goes 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. Yeah. And then it goes 0 to 124 in 10 and a half seconds, because you need that. And it tops out at 199.
Yeah. And a lot of times, they top out there because that's what's required for street legal like status. They have limiters built into them. these are super powerful cars. And the big thing that everybody talks about is, like, you know, in a lot of these, like in Formula One and a lot of racing, seconds matter. Like the end of the race comes down to a few moments. And so you have to be at your top of your game the entire time, whether it's refilling or switching out tires or whatever. Like, everything has to be at the absolute peak performance all the time. And it's a really impressive car company because they compete at the absolute highest level. Like I said, they're categorically denying that they're in talks to be bought by Apple. But they're not a public company. They're privately owned. So they don't actually have to tell anybody, like, anything, even within the company. So the PR department could be denying it, and it could be completely true. There are a number of confirmations from serious companies like Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal. So that gives a lot of credibility to the idea that at least some sort of a conversation's going on, even if it's just a strategic investment where Apple would invest in them and get rights to certain intellectual property, even if it's not buying the manufacturing arm of McLaren. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it's like, it makes sense. And there's been a lot of talk about how could this make, you know, where could this whole thing fit in? There is a part of McLaren, not McLaren Racing, but McLaren Applied to Technologies that Apple probably is most interested in. MAT, as they call it, the McLaren Applied Technologies. They do all sorts of tech development for cars and for the rest of McLaren, helping them perform at even higher levels. But it's like MAT pioneered VR simulators for drivers long before they began to emerge again in recent years. For purist cyclists who race single-speed bikes around Velodrome, they create a device under the seat that logs data and sends information to the coach on torque, speed, power, and other metrics in real time. They also created a system to log data coming in from players in the English national rugby team, again, in real time. This could determine, for instance, how tired a player was and susceptible to injuries there might be. So, yeah, it's a cool company. They do a lot of cool stuff, and clearly at this point there's some sort of a conversation going on. Does it turn into anything? I don't know, but they're talking about it. This also came out this week that they're talking to another company who builds a self-balancing motorcycle. And which, again, it's an electric motorcycle, self-balancing. It's pretty cool. But they are at this point, you know, Bob Mansfield came back to Apple full time, took over the Project Titan thing. It looks less and less like they're going to build an actual car and more like they're getting into self-driving vehicles or something along those lines. We're not exactly sure because we're never exactly sure with Apple. But whatever they were doing for the last year, it's shifted. And they've shifted the focus, they've shifted the leadership, and now they're looking at strategic investments and acquisitions of other motor companies. So who knows, but that's where we're going. Huh. And
Okay. Well, we'll see.
I may not have been right about AR, but I'm telling you I'm right about these cars. They're building a car, and they will never sell the car.
Let's stick on the car theme for a little bit longer here.
Okay.
And there was some other car news that came out from the good old U.S. federal government. Turns out autonomous cars is a thing.
Yeah.
And so, so the government's getting in on it. They're saying, you know what? For the sake of development, I think that we're going to set up some guidelines and some rules instead of just kind of doing the wait and see thing. So that's what they're doing. And it's called the Federal Automated Vehicle Policy. That's going to be the new thing. AV, automated vehicle. Forget about self-driving cars. We're not calling it that anymore. They're now automated vehicles. Which, I guess that's
cool. Yeah. So it's less of a mouthful. I like it, actually. I'm going with it. Automated vehicles, AVs, autos.
AVs. Oh, it's an AV. Instead of an EV, it's an AV. It's an EVAV. Or AEV.
Electric an AVE.
That would be a Tesla. An AVE. You're such an AVE. Anyways, their goal is to help reduce the 38,000 traffic fatalities that pretty much happen every year. And I get it. And they also think that it'll be good for people with disabilities or elderly folks who can't drive. So it has an accessibility piece. So all that to say, they're like, let's do this, guys. And essentially their policies come into four different buckets. So the first one, surprise, surprise, the vehicles need to be safe.
Okay, deal.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And I get it. And so what they're actually doing is they're laying out a 15-point safety assessment. So the idea is it used to be like self-certified, and now they're going to say, well, let's have it be less of that.
Yeah.
and a little more of third-party, independent, like we think this is what counts
you know,
safe.
Which I think the reality of it is that up to this point, like we generally trust the companies that are involved in this, but you know, we are talking about putting 2,000-pound missiles on the road. Like, it's probably a good idea to have a third-party opinion involved.
Yeah, I mean, I have slight concerns over them, like, saying, hey, we've made these vehicles to the letter of the law, so we're not at fault anymore or something, but I don't know. I won't be pessimistic about it. Let's see. The other thing, they're also... And they're not just coming out and saying, like, this is it, guys.
Yeah.
they definitely want to work with them. And there are certain things that they want to try to figure out, like, at what point, or if a car can't drive itself anymore, like, what will it do? Essentially, like, what are the options? Does it pull over? Does it put on the hazards? And again, it's like, if the human driver can't take over. I don't know. They're just trying to think through some of these things, which, again, all the companies have opinions on it. And the second bucket, if you will, is they're trying to lay out what is the difference between what the federal government and the state governments are going to be in charge of. And so this is one where state governments are kind of like, what? Yeah. You're taking our rights. So there's that conversation that's going to be headed down the path. The basic division that they're kind of going for is that if it's in the automated part of the vehicle, federal government's going to regulate that. When it comes to human drivers and licensing and things like that, states are still going to be in charge of that. Seems messy.
Seems very messy.
But that's what they're going with. And part of the logic is to say, we just need all these automated vehicles to work the same way, which I get it. If you get them all on the same standard, it just helps speed things up. I get it. It's a little soon to know what that standard is, I think, but whatever. They're going with it. The third thing is, and I actually think this is interesting, is they're going to change how they use existing regulatory tools. So one of the issues is that when a automaker like asks a question like, hey, how is this supposed to work? they're like, usually it takes several months to several years to reply to those things. And they're like, we're making a commitment to reduce it to 60 days. So I'm like, that's cool. They're going to give that priority. And then they're also going to make some exemptions to automakers when they're like, want to test out or they want to use test fleets and things. Again, they're usually like, no, we take years to do that. But now they're like, no, we're going to speed it up. And they also want to just kind of speed up the rulemaking process. So I think it's good. Essentially, they're saying, we get it. We're slow. We're trying to improve it. I feel like that's one that should have happened no matter what. But they're using it as a good excuse to do it. And then, I already talked about the fourth one, which means I probably got the first one wrong. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, the fourth one was kind of that same idea of the Department of Transportation is going to decide if it is safe or not, essentially. And they're also considering, and I think this is going to get companies up in arms, of collecting everybody's data. Yeah. And putting it and kind of essentially open sourcing all of it and saying it's available to everyone to use and to learn from. And again, I get it from a standards standpoint. If everyone's doing the same thing, like Wi-Fi, like it makes it really convenient and easy, which is super nice. I would prefer it if it was some sort of kind of like a Bluetooth or a HTML committee.
Yeah.
That's kind of saying, hey, y'all, we're going to do it this way, but it's all a consortium. Maybe they'll treat it that way. I have no idea. And then I think the last thing is that they have updated their classifications for what is automated driving or not, which we've seen it before where there's six steps that they managed to number 0 to 5. So that's awesome. Not confusing at all. You could tell it was done by some engineers who were all into like, you know, in a race, there's zero. So
we're zero or good.
Like, yeah, but the sixth spot is actually a 5. And what are you doing? But anyways, it goes all the way from no automation to full automation. And then it talks about what are the different things like steering and acceleration / deceleration, monitoring of the driver environment, a fallback when automation fails, and then just like the automated system is in total control. Enjoy the ride. So,
this is my thought. If you feel like this was inevitable, and I think kind of people are all along the same like lines of it of like, well, this is inevitable. Eventually, the government's going to get in. I am happy to see them saying, look, we realize this is coming. We want to create a framework for this to happen in a way that is safe for everybody. Because the big problem here is It's like, this is so new. This is so new and it's different. You know, like driving, the laws that make driving safe for most people, for every, you know, as many people as it is, and most importantly, fair when something goes wrong, are like long and complicated rule sets. Like it's not like Wi-Fi. When Wi-Fi stops working, it's different than when a car. Exactly. And so you can have like you get these like really amazing private organizations that come up with a protocol that everybody can agree to, and it doesn't need to be regulated by the federal government. And that's awesome. That's great. And it creates these really fast, innovative technologies. Whereas, man, self-driving cars, it just feels different because I think it is different. And reading through these regulations, they really emphasize the fact that these are not really regulations. They're guidelines. This is where the conversation's starting, and they don't seem ridiculous. It seems like a very open place to start. It seems like a great place to start to culture the conversation to go forward, to make sure that if a company does do something that gets a lot of people killed, that they're able to be held accountable for it, because at least there's some framework for it. Hey, how about you don't kill people? How about you make sure there's third party verification of all of this stuff? I think the data one, everybody sharing their data, is a really interesting question. As like you said, companies hate it, but and they're already complaining. But there are advantages that come along with having that. And this is the right time. I actually appreciate the fact that the federal government is stepping up now and saying, hey, we'd like to look into doing this, instead of in 20 years or 10 years when companies have a huge amount of really valuable data. And part of the baked in value of what they offer is their data. And if it's stated from the onset that, hey, if you want to be in part of this market, you have to be willing to share your data. You don't get to keep that as your own private gold mine. Then only companies that can figure out how to, like, I don't know. It just, it's one of those things where it like, it's an interesting question. There's parts of me that says, like, no, leave the companies alone. You know, trust them to this point. Like, you can't do it without these companies. Don't make it prohibitively difficult on them. On the other hand, man, if you are going to step in this way, doing it at the beginning is the right time to do it. Setting the rules this way now, as opposed to 20 years from now. And so, you know, I don't know. That's my biggest thing, is whether or not you think they should do it, the fact that they're going to have this conversation today is the right time to have it.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with that.
Yeah. That's fair. So I say all that to say, this is about as optimistic as I could be about how the government, federal government, would get involved in this. But yeah, this is pretty good. This seems reasonable, all things considered. Like, it was never going to go without them getting involved. So the fact that they're getting involved in this way is, cool.
Yeah. At the very least, they're saying, we would like to see this happen. We're willing to work with you. And that's
exactly. We want to facilitate it.
That's better than saying, this is scary. Stop, guys. Drones are dangerous.
Which, yeah. Yeah, FAA. You hear that? You hear that, FAA?
Yeah. Come on. We're all going to go to New Zealand.
Exactly. But this is my question, James. What are you going to do in your VA when it's driving you around? How are you going to spend your time?
Well, I was thinking about just using various chat apps like Google Allo to...
Google Allo came out this week. We've been using it.
Hope you downloaded it. It's Frizzle.
Yeah. It's...
Look us up. Yeah, we'll talk to you.
Check it out.
Can you do that? Or is it just phone
number? I think it's phone number only. You can't have my phone number.
Exactly. Five, five, five.
Yeah. So this is kind of a cool new app. Google announced this back at Google I.O. that it was coming along. It's their text. It's a new.
They said it'd be out by summer.
Yes. Under the line. There's a big complaint about the privacy aspect of it. They were going to talk about how, like, it's going to come default end-to-end encryption, and weren't going to be reading you the text unless you told them yes. Everything was going to be auto-deleted. Turns out none of that is true. You can have it deleted. You can have end-to-end encryption, but none of that comes automatically on, and to do it is overly complicated. It's as though they don't want you to do that. But what it does come with is Google built in to the conversation, just sort of jumps in there with you.
Which is
awesome. I like it. I don't hate it. That's for sure. This is,
I played an emoji game earlier today. Where it was, I played the emoji movies. And so essentially they gave me a bunch of emojis that then you try to guess what it is. Okay. So I got one out of two, out of three, actually. Oh my gosh, I'm horrible at this. It's an emoji of a girl wearing a crown and then a book.
Beauty and the Beast.
Princess Diaries.
That's what I was thinking.
I think more like literal is the idea. I didn't get this one. It's a green heart with like a, it's like an orange candy wrapper lantern thingy, and then a diamond ring.
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. It's like got a heart candy ring. I don't know. And then I had another one. It was like an egg in a frying pan, that same diamond ring, and a cat.
I have no idea.
Which, the hint was it's based on a Truman Capote novel. I was like, thanks for the hint. It's Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Never would have gotten that.
Breakfast, Tiffany's. What's with the... Oh, because she had a cat in the film. And then the heart... So again, it's a green heart. It's like a candy wrapper thing. And a diamond ring. And the hint is it's a 2011 superhero adventure.
Green Lantern? No, wait. The Hulk.
I didn't...
Maybe?
So? What did the... Maybe? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one, to be honest. I was kind of fed up with it, so okay. I quit. I was like, forget this.
2011 superhero movie. It's probably the Green Lantern. It came out in 2001, 2011. Try that, James. Try it.
Well, that must be... Oh, because he's got a ring.
Yeah, it is the Green Lantern.
It's green, it's a lantern, not a candy wrapper thing, and it's got the ring.
Yeah, we got it, James. Right. Nobody saw that movie. Why would they do that?
Thank you. I did. Really? I did.
Are you proud of yourself?
Yeah. So, it wasn't... Clearly, it had an impact on me. So, yeah. So, the idea, like you said, is you can have a one-on-one text, a group text, and the Google bot is always in there. You just at Google and it kind of pops up. You can ask it all sorts of stuff. You can ask it questions, which result in a Google search. Or if you do one of its magic things, like looking for a movie, I'm looking for a restaurant, looking for the weather, looking for team sports, it will then give you options.
If you type at Google, it will... Oh, I didn't know that. I kept doing the magic questions, which is sometimes why I would repeat the question like three different ways. Trying to get...
Well, I noticed that. I was like,
I was trying to get the magic Google to go. That's really funny. I feel like an
there
idiot
you go.
Now.
Just at Google it and you'll get the magic Google to go. You're welcome. And so it's kind of fun because the idea would be like, let's just say you and I were hanging out and be like, hey, we should grab dinner. And you'd be like, at Google, where to get dinner? And then options would pop up. You could tap on it. It would then give you more information. You could then get directions or look at the menu or whatever. If it was a movie, you could look at movie times. You could watch a trailer. You could do all sorts of things. And so, I don't know. It's one of those where, on one hand, very cool. Seems neat. On the other... It's so isolated.
It's Google Wave. It's going to be gone in 2 years. Don't get your hopes set on it.
It's just like a playground.
It's so funny because it's like because we were asking the question back in when it was first announced. Like, what is Google doing? Why isn't this part of Google Hangouts? This just seems like a really crazy thing to do. Like, they've got their text messaging app on Android. They've got Allo. They've got Hangouts. They've got this. They got that. They have all these different messaging platforms. How does this fit in to a larger strategy that would lead to success, especially when having a large network is really critical for these things to work? Everybody's involved in it. They didn't even like launch a web portal version of this so that you could, you know, like you could use it on your desktop, which is a problem we found earlier this evening. Of like, well, if you send me a link for the camera so we can do the hangout together. Like I can't see that on my computer because it's sent to my phone. This is really annoying. And the big problem here, I think, is that now that I'm actually using it, it's so obvious that that's just not the plan at all. This right now is they're trying to train their Google bot with the whole natural language understanding thing. And so they came out with a platform with a couple of features where they could specifically just train their bots and give it more practice with interacting with people. That's its entire purpose. And you are improving the entire Google ecosystem by using this platform, because you're helping it learn, helping it train. They might have one or two features that make it into other things, like, you know, Hangouts might eventually have an at Google function built into it.
You know, I like just playing with it this last week. I want it everywhere. It's like Apple needs to have this inside of message. Facebook needs to have their thing. Like, I know they've got all their little chat bots or whatever, but like, they should, you should have a persistent
assistant
helper always there that you can just call up.
Honestly, like, and this. I like the idea of the at Google, like just allow me to at Siri in iMessages and have Siri interject with a response. Like, why wouldn't you do that? Like, and especially because it translates everything into a written language. I don't know. I know.
Oh yeah. I'm like, this is, that is how it should work. And honestly, even with Facebook's thing, I don't know. Cause their whole bots things are weird, but I could still see it. We're like, yeah, just give me an at whatever. And, I don't know, maybe for the third party stuff, maybe it's not it. Don't give them all access to it, but I don't know. It's cool. I mean, unfortunately, it's not like you said, it's an experiment. The network's never going to be big enough to use it. And in a week or two, we'll be back to just using regular text messaging. But man, I'm going to miss the, I might keep it on my phone just so I can talk to the assistant every once in a while.
Like, I'll probably keep it on my phone. And what I think is interesting about it is that Google clearly has a problem when it comes to communication, where it's like, they can't really just, I'll bet they feel like it's really questionable ground to just give their natural language bots access to everybody's text messages, even though they have all that information. They're probably we shouldn't do that. So they're creating this safe zone for them to do it, where you know that you're participating in this conversation. It's not that, and so it's inherently all of this data is accessible. And because if you think about it, like, they have a tremendous amount of text input all the time from Google.com, but none of it is natural language. Or very little of it is natural language, which means that it trains there's this weird symbiotic training going on. We learn how to Google search something, and it reinforces that by learning how we, like, these esoteric ways that we communicate with the Google search bar. And so this is their way of kind of getting away from that. Give it this entirely normal language communication platform and let the bots grow there, which is cool. It's a cool project. I don't mind using it. It's just recognizing what it is that it's not a full product platform. It's never going to replace Hangouts, and it's not supposed to. It's supposed to be around for a while so they can build the technology, and then they'll move on from there. But it's cool. Cool.
It is cool. All right, I'm turning my video back on to show you this next thing. So HP came out with a new product.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
Compelled to tell you about it. It's called the HP Sprocket. Boom! Because I have one, which is why I got to turn the video back on. So it's, let's see here. How would I describe it? It's probably the top part of it's the size of like an early iPhone. But the thickness is probably like a deck of cards. That's probably how I would describe it. And it uses what's called Z Ink paper, which are like 2 inches by 3 inch.
That sounds like a picture frame.
That happen to also be stickers. And what's really interesting about it is it uses no ink. Yeah, so HP actually has it. It's actually a pretty sweet app that's connected to it. So the way that you use it, and I would just like verbally tell you, is you turn on the printer by pressing the button, and it connects to your phone via Bluetooth. You can't actually, like, that's the only connection type that it has. Eventually a thing pops up, and you say allow. And then you have a choice of pulling photos from your camera roll, from Instagram, from Facebook, or from Flickr. Or you could just take a picture in the moment and and print that out. And I'm going to, and you'll be able to hear it in a little bit here. You pick a photo, and then once you have that photo, you can do all sorts of stuff. You can edit it. It's very like Snapchat-esque in that regard. So you can add a border to it. You can add text to it. You can add stickers to it. You can do whatever. And then when you're ready, you simply hit the printer button like I just did, and it sends you a little note saying send to printer. And in a little bit here, you should hear it
start. Oh man, I'm excited.
Come on, guy, don't let me down. Don't let me down. Ooh.
Yeah, I hear it.
So that's it. Printing. I took a picture of a really cool
I guess. Ooh. I can't wait to see it. It's
very colorful. So, yeah. So, printing it off. Can you see it if I show you on the...
Okay, yeah. I can't see it.
Yeah, so it's just kind of spitting out the piece of paper. Like I said, there's no ink involved. And it's done. Boom. It's dry. You can touch it. Peel it. Sticker.
That's cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, so that's...
How do I post it to Facebook?
Yeah, about that. Well, use the sticky back and you just post it on your monitor,
persistent,
on your Facebook page. Yeah, yeah, and it's just there. It's kind of it's a form of AR. If you
think I will think about it.
Yeah. So, yeah, super cool little guy. Pretty fun. It's $130, so it's not like you can buy a pair of sunglasses Snapchat for that amount of money. so again, a friend of the podcast, David Perry, helped make this product a reality. Right. So pretty cool. You buy these little packets of sheets of paper. The paper itself is like 50 cents a pop. So so far the reviews of it have been like, it's pretty fun. It's
mandatory. Pretty that's fun. You know, it's about as much as you can hope for a printer, I suppose.
I honestly, it'd be nice if it's weird because it's Bluetooth-esque. Like, I feel like it would be super fun for parties where someone, and I don't know how you would do it, but like somehow have your friends, you take a picture, submit it to some sort of centralized service thing, and then it just starts printing them out. And which is then connected to like another computer or something. I don't know. There's just a part of me that's like, man, it'd be sweet to figure that out at a party, because I think it'd be a lot of fun to see something, take a picture, and then it's like a real life, like Snapchat stories type of thing that then people can come grab the photo and be like, oh, that's cool, I'll take that. I don't know, but kind of a fun little toy. It's worth checking out if I think it'd be fun for like maybe younger kids who are playing with stuff and into scrapbooking and that kind of stuff. It could be kind of fun, but yeah, HP Sprocket, check her out. That's the end of the commercial.
That sounds like a cool product, James.
It's, hey, you know what? It's printing. I get it, but some people like the print, and it's just they keep experimenting, trying to figure out new ways. The interesting part about it is like HP doesn't actually sell the paper. It's another third party. We only make money on the
interesting
device. There are no.
No wonder it's so expensive.
Revenue to it.
You know what?
Well, that should tell you something about the other printers, you know what? Right?
That was the jab I was looking for. I'm ready to move on. So, do you want to build a quadcopter?
Oh my gosh, in the worst of ways, yes.
You want to build a Lego model?
I'm in.
Do you want to build a Lego model quadcopter? Because this is going to be awesome.
Oh, just... Take my money such good now, news. Please.
Yeah, so there's a...
And it's only a little bit more expensive than
I know,
sunglasses.
It's not that bad. Lego bricks have been the foundation of so many awesome and elaborate creations. It's no wonder people have already had the idea to send them skyward in drone form. But while there are plenty of do-it-yourself tutorials around, as well as the odd pre-built model, we haven't seen anything quite as accessible and affordable as these new Lego UAV kits from Flybricks. Available today at an introductory price of $149. It comes with everything you need to build a quad, hex, or octocopter in as little as 15 minutes. Yeah, seems pretty cool. So it's just exactly what it sounds like. It's these little micro motors with the stabilization stuff built in. You put Lego pieces together and you send it skyward for $150. I kind of really want one.
That sounds great.
I know.
Yeah, I have some friends who they have kids who are into Legos, and I sent this to them. I was like,
I got good news, guys.
Like, your kids will love it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Dude, their deluxe thing is 190, but it'll jump to 250. Eventually.
Yeah, all this is getting the deluxe thing comes with like a controller, whereas the 149 one comes with it works off of connects to your phone, which I'm like, that's fine. I'm fine with that. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Yeah. So it's the remote is the important part.
Flybricks.
Yeah, Flybricks.
And they're not officially working with Lego.
I don't know. I mean,
I think I read somewhere where it was saying not officially, but Lego knows.
Yeah, because they're using the Lego like brand name everywhere, and like the Lego with the R, which means that you could not sell a product for $190 and use the name Lego without Lego having said, yeah, that's fine, you can do that. So they're licensed through Lego. They have to be. Which just means that they're buying the Legos wholesale and the bricks and selling them. That, you know, do a licensing dealio. I'm glad to see that, though, because Mega That's Bricks are just terrible at that scale. They got none of the reliability and coolness of real Legos. They're worth the extra money, people. Just make an investment in your children's future and buy real Legos.
Dude, I'm with you, man. Legos are awesome.
Still my biggest point of conflict that your daughter, like Lego, your daughter. You're like Lego large, like the large, the infant style Legos.
Yeah.
Are like, they don't have great options. Mega Bricks has way better options for infant Legos. So when I got your daughter infant building blocks, I got her Mega Bricks ones. I'm still like, ugh, I feel like for Christmas, I still feel bad about it. I feel like I cheated. I feel like I cheated her, which is even worse.
She plays That's good. All the time.
When she's ready, when she won't choke to death on real Legos, I mean, 100%.
Yeah, we're not there
that's
yet.
Kinda what, that's why I figured it was important to...
Yeah, no, I definitely intend to get her interested in Legos and building things.
Yeah, stems.
I'm excited for those days.
For you.
Exactly.
All right, so it's been 2 hours. We've got 3 articles left. How do you want to do this? Do you want to do it or do you want to? How are you feeling?
I can do mine in about 30 seconds. So the tallest building in the world, the one in Dubai, they have managed to attach LCD screens over it. Essentially making it the largest LCD screen in the world.
Pretty impressive.
Well. And there's a video that we'll link to. You can watch them kind of building it. Watching the workers out on the outside doing their thing just gives me butterflies.
I don't need to see that.
Just watching it.
Just knowing that video.
Yeah, that part's pretty bad. But then at the end, they show you like it actually working. And you're like, that's pretty awesome.
It's pretty freaking impressive.
Pretty amazing. So check it out. It's pretty awesome.
It's cool. I'll just do mine too really quickly. One is there's a video of a group that taught a bunch of artificial intelligence is how to play Doom, and where it feeds in images from the game straight into the AI, and then it controls the player, and it's real effective at killing real people. Like, it's really good.
Wow.
And the big question that everybody's asking is, why did you teach an AI how to kill humans? I get that it's a virtual reality world. But why would you even start down that road? But it's a fun little video to watch. Actually, it's pretty impressive technology. So go check that out. And then also, if you haven't gotten a phone call via Facebook Messenger on your iPhone iOS 10, get excited, because when people call you from now on, it'll show up as a normal. It'll look like an actual phone call. Kind of.
Will it?
Sometimes it won't. Like if you're either James or I, but if you're my girlfriend, totally works. No seeming explanation of why it works for her and not for us.
That's
it's
so weird.
Yeah. And it's not just her word either. Like I trust her. I trusted her when she told me that it worked, but we actually tested it out. She was like, "Do you want to see it?" I was like, "Kind of. Yes." So I called her while sitting next to her, and it works perfectly. I don't even get it.
I don't get it. You broke my phone too.
But yeah, so that's it. That's it. Go check it out. Go make Facebook Messenger calls.
Go make Facebook Messenger calls. I like it. All right. Dude, that's the show. Awesome. That's all we got. We're done. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. And thank you so much for listening to episode 261. We really do genuinely appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes and all the links and all the awesomeness at furloughbros.com/261. If you want to get those show notes sent directly to you, just do it. Sign up. It's easy. And finally, this podcast is supported by listeners like you. And you can also contribute with all that information. Guess where? It's furloughbros.com. And it's there. So, thanks, everybody. We appreciate it. My name is James Furlough, and my wannabe snap glass, what is it? What do you call them? Snapticles?
Snapticles.
Doesn't sound right. Anyways, that guy who wanted to take pictures with his face is Matthew Furlough, and so we will talk next time. Thank you.